Paula, how do young readers know you? Tell us about your newest and best-known books for young adults.
My children's book career started in 2003 when I wrote a book about Sammy Lee, the first one of the first Asian Americans to win a gold medal at the Olympics in 1948. Yes, 1948. He won a gold medal for diving, and then he won another gold medal in 1952. And that book was a picture book that I wrote for Lee and Lowe Books, and that's kind of what started off my children's book career. I wrote nonfiction children book biographies for elementary age students. And then I ended up writing my first young adult novel, which came out in 2008 from HarperCollins, and it was called Good Enough. And even though it was fiction, it was very much based on my own life as a teen violinist, based a lot of youth orchestra adventures and basically about my life as a violin geek. So those were the books that I was known for. And my new book kind of, I think, combines the novel length book that I wrote with my nonfiction biographies. And that's the book coming out in April of 2021 from a Whisper to a Rallying Cry, The Killing of Vincent Chin and the Trial That Galvanized the Asian American Community. And it's being published by Norton Young Readers, which is the children's book imprint of W.W. Norton and Company. So that's a summary of how I got started in this business.
Can you tell us in a nutshell about Vincent Chin?
Yes. On the night of his bachelor party, Vincent Chin was beaten to death with a baseball bat by two white auto workers in Detroit in 1982. This happened during the height of anti-Japanese sentiment in the American auto industry due to increased competition from Japanese import cars and mass layoffs across the country, especially in Michigan, which was home to the big three, Ford, Chrysler, and GM. Witnesses claimed overhearing one man allegedly shout, "It's because of you little expletive, I can't say that on the air, that we're out of work." Although the two men pled guilty to manslaughter, the judge gave them a fine of about $3,000 each and a sentence each of 3 years of probation. So this obviously very shocking, lenient sentence angered the Asian American community in Detroit, and their anger led to activism as they joined multicultural forces to fight for Vincent's justice. All of this led to the first federal civil rights trial for an Asian American. The first trial resulted in a guilty conviction for the killer, the man who held the bat in 1984. But the killer never spent a day in jail because the conviction was appealed and overturned in 1986 due to a legal technicality. Despite all of this, Vincent Chin's death was not in vain. He still became a symbol over the years of justice for the Asian American community. There have been two documentaries about this case, one of which was nominated for an Academy Award. And in about the almost 40 years since his death, Vincent Chin's name is always mentioned whenever anti-Asian racism happens. So you can imagine Vincent Chin has been mentioned in the news and on social media quite recently, ever since the president used racist rhetoric to describe COVID-19 as the, quote, China virus and the China plague. And that has led to a rise in more than 2,500 anti-Asian hate crimes being reported this year, according to statistics from the FBI and a crime tracker known as Stop AAPI Hate, provided by the Asian Pacific Policy and Planning Council. So basically, although in the end, the man who beat him to death was found guilty of manslaughter, but not of violating his civil rights, Vincent Chin still remains a symbol for the Asian American community to not be complacent whenever we witness racism or acts of hate against either our own community or against other people.
When I was looking at some of your social media on Instagram and your Twitter account as well, I noticed that you addressed that, quote unquote, what we're hearing these days is China virus. So I'm glad you brought that up. Is it fair to call you an activist?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I would not call myself an activist only because I hesitate to call myself an activist because I have a lot of friends who are truly activists. You know, they organize, they protest, they fight all the time. They do a lot of organized activism. So I guess I'm not an organized activist, but I would say that I have the activist spirit, and I would say I'm an activist through my writing.
That's what I was going to say. This new book that's coming out, From a Whisper to a Rallying Cry, I think that's the work of an activist.
Oh, well, thank cute. I guess. Yeah, it's funny.
Go ahead and call yourself one.
Oh, I will then. You know, that makes me feel good. I think it's just because I always think about activism as it's such an important role. What, you know, my friends and what people do. I admire so much what people do actively as activists with organization and protests and running for politics and trying to affect policy change. But I'm flattered, and I guess you're right. I will consider myself an activist because I write, and that's how I fight back.
There you go.
I fight back through my words, because words do matter, especially I think for young people, because they're finding out more and more what our children and what our teenagers read. That really can affect their viewpoints as they get older, when they become adults. So I'm trying to fight back with activism through writing at the young age. I'm trying to affect change at a young age when the kids are a little bit more influenced. There you go.
And the seminar topic at the Kalamazoo Public Library is The Time Is Now, How the Present Echoes from Our Past and How Books Guide Us Through the Process of Healing, Growth, and Unity. And I would think books have a lot to do with that. I wondered if you can give us a hint. You're doing the midday keynote talk at the seminar, and it's going to be done virtually because of what we're going through right now with the pandemic. Can you give us a hint what that midday talk will be about?
Oh, well, first, I'm going to try to avoid showing my cats in front of the camera because
oh,
I'm very proud of I always hear about the cats bombing the Zoom presentations. But on a more serious note, I think what I plan to do is talk in detail about this case, because it's actually a lot more complicated than people realize. A lot of times people misrepresent the case by saying, oh, it was two racist guys and they both killed him and they were both unemployed. And there were little details like, no, actually one of them was not unemployed. He was a foreman, Chrysler. He was in management. The other thing is that because they were found not guilty of violating his civil rights, technically, you know, the man who held the bat has claimed to this day that he's not racist, and he denies ever saying certain things that were testified in court. So, I mean, it's a very complicated case. There are a lot of gray areas. So my book really explores everything. I think this is probably one of the more comprehensive looks at the case where I really go into depth about what happened. So that's part of my talk. I'll also talk a little bit about my writing journey and how I became a writer, and also I think a big part of this story is how I discovered the story, because as a Gen Xer from the Generation X community, growing up, we was never taught about Asian American history. We didn't even cover the illegal imprisonment of the Japanese American community during World War II in our own country. That I didn't even learn about that in my history classes.
You know, I didn't either, Paula. And by the time I did, I was an adult and I was stunned and upset. Why don't we learn about this when we're young?
Exactly. In fact, there have been statistics I found from 2011 and as recently as 2016, where there have been surveys and research done about what's taught in school systems. And I'll give you an example. About 5 or 6 years ago, they found out that in California alone, when they looked at all the historical Americans, American people who were studied in social studies classes from kindergarten to 12th grade, more than 77% were of white American historical figures. And I think maybe about 13 to 15% were African-American, and then maybe 3 or 4% were Latino, and 1% was Native American and Indian. And then I think there were 0 Asian-Americans that were, and this is California, which has one of the largest Asian populations. So it just goes to show you none of this stuff is taught. And so that's something I'm going to be talking about, how I stumbled upon this story. And I shouldn't be stumbling upon this kind of history. No one should. It doesn't matter if you're of Asian descent or not. We need to know about all this history because it's affecting our present right now. That's why there's so much anti-Asian racism right now, because people don't know about this history. We're still viewed as the perpetual foreigner. We're still viewed as not truly American when we have contributed so much to this country over centuries, and people don't know about that. So I'm going to be talking about that, about the erasure of Asian Americans. And that's why I think this book and even my picture books, I think they're important, because they're bringing up people that kids and high school students should know about.
Other than raising awareness, what are your thoughts on how books help us, and maybe in this circumstance, how they help youth through challenging times?
Well, they've come out with articles saying that if you read, it makes you a more sympathetic person, because as you're reading, you're not seeing and learning about something or enjoying a fictional narrative through the filter of a director, actors, many other people interpreting it for you and presenting their vision. You get to read. So you hear the voices of the people in the dialogue that you're reading. You get to picture what the person looks like when there's a description of what the person looks like. So when you walk away from a book, you walk away with a greater sense of compassion and sympathy. So that's, I think, what I hope happens with my book. And that's what I think should, that's why we want to encourage young people to keep reading more. And that's why it's so important, especially at a young age, for kids and for teenagers to develop regular reading habits, because from there they can walk away with a greater sense of compassion.
How do youth experience this time of divisiveness of a pandemic any differently than adults, do you think? It's painful to think of children who hardly know anything else if they're young enough. I personally think of libraries beginning when I was a child as a kind of oasis from the mad, mad world. How do you think that they experience this? Is it different than us grown-ups?
That's a really good question. I would say they don't experience it too much differently than adults, because we were children once. So I think that what we experienced growing up is every child goes through the same coming of age journey. So I would say that kids today, I think the only thing that makes it a little bit different is kids today versus our generations. They're a little bit more savvy with social media. They're getting a lot of information at them from so many different places. Right now they're doing remote learning. They're so much more adept at computers and going online than we were at their age. So I think that I think the one thing that's different is the amount of information they're being asked to absorb all at once. For us, it was a newspaper article, or even when we were online, it was America Online. You know, it was my AOL account. So it was a little bit more funneled, if that makes sense. It's like I would read the newspaper, then later I would go on AOL and see something. Today, they're getting TikToks, they're getting social media, they're seeing the TVs on, they're watching videos on their iPhone. They're having to filter a lot more information at once, which means that I think kids have a harder challenge than we did in terms of knowing what is accurate information. Is it that meme from 5 years ago that was taken out of context? How do they know that? That's really difficult. So I would say that it is different for kids in terms of the amount of information they're being asked to absorb. In terms of the pandemic, in terms of the divisiveness in this country, I think if you're a kid, it doesn't matter what generation you're from, I think when you first witness what is hatred or racism or any type of political divisiveness, it's overwhelming, because you're hopefully, and this isn't true, I know, for everyone, unfortunately, but hopefully if you're raised to be a fair, compassionate kid, it's like losing part of your innocence for the first time when you witness someone being mean to someone else, you know, especially if they're adults, especially if you see your president saying hateful, racist rhetoric. It's a little confusing to you because you were raised to believe, oh, our president is the leader of our country. So I think that there's a little bit of a struggle in terms of, wait, this is going against everything my parents or whoever my adult guardians are, my teachers, this goes against everything I was just taught. So a little bit of your foundation is ripped from you. So emotionally, I think you have to deal with a little bit more. It's a little bit heavier, I think, for a kid. However, I would say that our country is so divisive right now that I think adults are kind of going through a second childhood ourselves. I think a lot of us are so shocked by what's going on that in a way, I think we're all going through a very traumatic, unprecedented time. It's once every century do we go through a global pandemic of this magnitude. So I think that we're all going through a collective traumatic experience together, where the adults also feel about just as overwhelmed as kids. So I think that that's what makes this particular time right now very unique compared to other times. Like, for example, when we had the traumatic 9/11 happen, we were adults. We were shocked. we were horrified, but we were able to kind of rally together because we had already, things had been building up historically to that attack. But with the pandemic, it kind of came out of nowhere. We all forgot about 1918. And also it's completely global. So I think that what's happening today is so unique that for adults, I think we're just as overwhelmed as the kids. I really do.
You just mentioned also that one of the challenges for youth and adults today is differentiating between truth, facts, and fake news. You've worked as a journalist as well, Detroit News, People Magazine, the Seattle Times. So I wondered about your thoughts on the attacks going on right now on the free press and that the press is somehow the enemy of the people. We hear that ugly phrase as well. And maybe you even have some advice to youth, how to differentiate when they're immersed in social media as they are between fake news and facts.
I'm horrified by how the press is under attack right now, how the media is being falsely accused of, oh, you're making this up. And I think, unfortunately, it's led to a lot of people going down conspiracy rabbit holes, not knowing what to believe. I'll give you a brief example. Even before the election from 2016, before the term fake news became, unfortunately, a mainstream term, I remember just being on Facebook or Twitter and friends who were journalists, friends who were very, very smart and very discerning about knowing where their news came from. I can't tell you how many times I'd say, oh my God, this famous celebrity died. And I would, and then they'd post an article and I would click on the article and I would go, did you not read the date? This article came out 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, you see, I mean, that's kind of like the joke. Marvin Gaye has died several times now because everyone is just finding out about it. So that made me worried several years ago because I was like, these are journalist friends. These are just my friends who are very, very smart and discerning. And even they are getting careless with dates. They're getting careless with their information. People do not remember what primary sources are. When you read an article, you have to look at the date. You have to look at who published it. You have to ask yourself, are there any other articles that have similar information? You know, it's like when you're a kid and you're doing a term paper for high school. You just don't look at an Encyclopedia Britannica. You have to go to the original source. If Wikipedia says this fact, and then you look at the little footnote and it said it comes from this newspaper article, go to the newspaper article. If the newspaper article says, oh, and we interviewed this author who wrote a book about this topic, go to the book that the author wrote. You have to constantly peel back the onion. And I think that because so much information is coming to us today, we're getting lazy, we're getting complacent, and we just grab the first layer of the onion and we're not willing to keep pulling back to see the core of the truth. So that's just a general thing. And I think that in a way that's kind of commonplace because just we get busy, we get older and we've just got a lot of responsibilities. And even as kids, you know, they've got their sports practice, they've got classes, they've got chores, whatever. You know, we tend to go for what's convenient and easy. Unfortunately, what's happening today, we can't afford to be complacent and just want the easy, convenient way of finding out the news. We actually have to be activists ourselves. We have, and by being an activist, and we talked about that earlier, in order to be an activist, it may not mean that you're running for politics or you're officially organizing a protest or a rally or doing something like that. You can be an activist just by saying, I'm not going to read this one article or click like on a Facebook post that a friend, I'm going to go and research this on my own and make sure that I'm completely educated on this piece of news before I click like. That alone is an act of activism because you're trying to make sure you know the difference between what is a legitimate news story from a legitimate news place that has been fairly and objectively reported versus something that was copied and pasted on somebody's blog or Twitter post.
Check your sources. Check your sources. I say that to people a lot these days. Well, and then finally, I wanted to touch on another part of what you do. You write for television too, but maybe we'll have to talk about that another time. But you're also a professional violinist. And I think music, perhaps more than any art form, has healing abilities, is a means of unifying people. Do you use playing the violin, music, perhaps in what you listen to, as a way of healing or soothing or de-stressing or unifying?
Yes, I've been playing the violin since I was 5. And obviously, I mentioned earlier, that's what my first YA novel, Good Enough, was about. And I would say music definitely is healing. I always go to music. In fact, before I write, I usually practice the violin because it's a left brain, right brain thing. It kind of gets me, a lot of people do yoga or work out. And so for me, playing the violin is that way of kind of centering myself before I go write, before I go and write. I still play with orchestras. Well, before the pandemic, played with orchestras. I've gone on tour with rock bands like No Doubt and Fun, and I do a lot of different types of things. I'm actually having fun with Zoom rehearsals with a country band. So that's been fun, doing a little fiddling around. So I would say, yes, it definitely helps. I think especially during this time, I'm very grateful I have this outlet. I will say, though, I think even with my writing, it's also healing, because when I write or when I play the violin, I get lost in a different world, in a better world. And I would say one of the things that I noticed in researching my Vincent Chin book was that Vincent originally wanted to be a writer. He was constantly described by family and friends as a bookworm. When he was a child, his favorite place was to go to the library and read. He wrote poetry all the time. His mom said, you got to be, being a writer is risky. That's not enough money. So that's why he was on his way to become an engineer before he died. But creativity is something that everybody I interviewed for this book. In fact, one of the defense lawyers, she too said growing up, her favorite place was the public library in Detroit. She read Charlotte's Web as a kid. She was a bookworm. A lot of people I interviewed, they talked about reading, and anything creative was something that centered their lives, even if they didn't focus on it in real life, their jobs. Even if they had a regular job, creativity and doing anything like music, writing, painting, whether or not you're a professional or not, it's so important. I think I'm very much a fan of the weekend warrior, you know, the people who are, I'm a banker by day, but over the weekend I play in a band, you know, for fun or something. I absolutely love that. I think that's a big part of just our humanity. And I think that being creative helps you be better at whatever job that you're doing. You know, there are a lot of doctors there are a lot of surgeons that actually play the violin, and it makes sense because when you play the violin and when you are a surgeon, your fingers have to be very, very precise with their movements. So I just think I can't live without music. I can't live without art. And even if I wasn't a professional musician or writer, this would be a huge part of my life.
Well, we're very much looking forward to your midday keynote talk at the Kalamazoo Public Library Youth Literature Seminar. And personally, I think it's as much for adults as youth. So don't age yourself. You can join in on this online and listen to Paula and a lineup of wonderful people to listen to. So we're looking forward to that, Paula, and thank you for spending some time with us today.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And I look forward to the panel, and it's an honor to be involved with everyone else in the lineup. I'm very excited for it.